Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
KYW News Radio Original Podcasts.
It's just a good conversation with someone you didn't know you were interested in. I'm Matt Leon, and this is One-on-One, sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Get a deal you'll like on a Honda you'll love.
If you want something bad enough, you have to work to get it because no one's handing it to you. And I think my dad, I mean, I'll never forget the first time I ever beat him in one-on-one. That was like a big deal because he never took it easy on me. And I think if you have that kind of a background like I did, no one's taking it easy on you. You have to keep working to be better. That's a big life lesson. And I think that's why I'm where I am now.
And our guest this week, Jada Pierce, she is a Philadelphia native, and she is the head women's basketball coach at Niagara University. And Jada, thanks so much for taking the time.
I'm so excited to be on with you today, Matt.
So you guys had a great year, went to the MAC final, second round of the WNIT. How satisfying was this season?
It was definitely satisfying, but as a head coach, you always want more. You know, our goals we set out was to win a MAC championship this year, and we felt we had the right group, you know, with us. And unfortunately, we fell short to a really great Fairfield team, but I couldn't have been more proud of the performance that we put on in that championship game. And to be able to say that we were honored to get selected to postseason again, which is a second time in program history, because last year was the first time, is pretty amazing. And when you have that, you know, on your resume for the young women that were on the team this year, they really cannot hang their heads at all, knowing that they made some history as well, because we won a postseason game too.
How long does it take you to completely kind of decompress from the previous season, kind of catalog it, and put it to rest? Is it something that happens relatively quickly, or will it be something that parts of it might linger into the summer, into camp, before you completely kind of close the door?
I think this year in particular, because like we just got done, it was just relatively last Monday. So you're talking 10, 11 days ago, we just got done. And I still feel like I'm in that mode, you know, and I'm still sad that we don't have practice today and a game to play tomorrow. I think it does take a couple of months, to be honest with you. We do get time away. We come back in mid-June. So I think for us as coaches, we need that time to regroup and meet, you know, and figure out, hey, what went well? What do we need to improve on? And what group do we have now that we can get better with? And I think June is a good time for us to be back, mid-June, because I think you set your goals and sights on what you want to do that next season. And I think for us coaches and some of the players that are returning, they do still think about that last game. So that's used as a motivation to kind of help you going into the next season.
You mentioned first postseason last year. The last 2-3 years, it feels like the program has taken a giant kind of step up to a different level. What has really clicked over the last few years? I mean, obviously the players have been playing very well, and there's obviously a level of talent. But are there some other things that you kind of feel like has pushed your program forward?
I think, you know, for us, everything starts with our defense, and we've been building with that since 2018 when we switched to the system that we're in now. And I think every year you're going to get better. It's not going to be the same. And I think the last 3 years has been like really like a buildup of buy-in of what we're trying to do. And when you begin to lead the nation in certain categories, I think that gives you a little bit of a motivator too. So I think, you know, having great leaders on our team that have been here through the trenches. And we were very blessed to have, you know, Angel and Aaliyah Parker, who are local players that we were able to keep home, change the trajectory, you know, of this program. And like you said, it takes a lot of great players. And those two in particular, especially Angel, because she's the older sister, this was her fifth year. And these last 3 years, she was really determined on really helping us to, you know, reach that level of winning a championship. And she did everything she possibly could, you know, the last 3 years. And we asked a lot of her and her sister, of Aaliyah as well. And I think the staff continuity has a lot to do with it too. I did not have to add an assistant coach during this time. I haven't had to add an assistant coach in 4 years. So I think you're hearing a lot of the same voices. And when the players have that consistency, I think that goes a long way. They know what to expect from us every single day, that we have their back, that we're going to teach them the right way. We're going to support them in everything that they're doing. And I think all of that spills onto the court, because I always feel like basketball is going to take care of itself. But what are we doing off the court to kind of make those things, you know, happen and that cohesion?
Is there a conversation with the group as progress is made of getting into a different mind space that we are now one of the teams in the conference that people look forward to playing? Like, we don't sneak up on people. Everybody knows when we're coming to town. You know, is that a conversation you have to have with the kids and everybody with the program, that life's a little different now? And sometimes getting to a certain point on the mountain, it's harder to stay there than it is the process to get there.
It is. I mean, I think, like, I would say about 2.5 years ago, we were trying to explain to them that, you know, we're not the old Niagara. This is not, you know, a team that was consistently finishing, you know, kind of near the bottom of the MAC, the bottom, I would say third, you know, of the MAC, crept up a little bit a few times in the like number six range and stuff like that, maybe five or four within the last 10 years. And, you know, we tried to explain to them, listen, you're getting everyone's A game now. You're not getting the, oh, it's just Niagara coming in here and chalking it off, you know, as a W. So we tried to explain to them and even show them on film, you know, the energy level being different. Look at them playing against someone else and look how they celebrated. This was last year. Someone celebrated that they beat us and you would have thought they beat UConn. And I'm like, what just happened? And we're trying to tell the team, look at this. They got excited because they beat you. We know you're not UConn, you're not Tennessee, you know, those schools, but look at that. So understand who we are now and how you're being perceived and what you're doing as a program and taking that next step. So those were That actually was a lot of conversations, Matt. And I think it took us some time to really realize it, because even this year, we had some games that we didn't come out with the fire that we needed. And we were playing catch up because our group was so used to being the underdog. Like, that was their role. And they relished in that role of being an underdog. And we're like, we're too good to be starting games out slow. Like, what are we doing? And then playing catch up. We had a game last year, played at Manhattan here, and we were down 20. Fourth quarter starts, we're down 20. We have the best quarter. At that point, we wound up having another one this year, the best quarter in program history. We outscored them 33-9. We won in regulation. And that had never happened. And so I think we started to shift a little bit then and not trying to get ourselves in too deep of holes. But it's really hard when that's all you've kind of known is being the underdog and shifting now to, like, you have to be the dominant force that you know you are and start out that way. But that was a constant reminder. Like, those conversations were happening more frequent than not, to be honest with you.
So now let's pivot to your story. Growing up, was basketball your number one sport? Or were you, I know you did a lot of different things in high school, but was basketball always at the top of the depth chart? Or was it whatever was happening was the most important thing?
Honestly, I was running track in grade school. And, you know, I kind of liked it. Kind of fun. It's nice when you're, you know, one of the fastest kids on the you know, on the track. It was very natural for me. And I was at Spruance Elementary. That's where I went to school after Ethel Allen. And, you know, I remember setting a few records there and doing that type of thing. And then next, you know, somebody's like, oh, we're going out to the courts to go play. And I was like, oh, okay. You know, I had no idea. My dad played a little bit in high school, had to cut his career short. He did play a little bit in junior college, again, cutting his career short. Due to having to work and things like that, other responsibilities for the family. And so he never forced basketball on me. It was never a thing where you had to play. So he let the game come to me, and it did. And once I put that ball in my hand, I was 10 years old, and I never wanted to let it go then. And I just fell in love with it. And, you know, it was just one of those things where, I don't know, you find something you love and you just want to hold on to it. Yes, they convinced me to do track and, you know, in high school, and I did a little bit of softball in junior high, but it was always basketball once I picked that ball up, you know, when I was 10 years old.
What was it about basketball that had that effect on you? Could you even identify it, or was it just like this? It just felt like this is what you were supposed to be doing.
It felt like what I was supposed to be doing. And not that anything was missing with track. I mean, I was so young. You don't really know a whole lot, you know, at that age. And I don't know. It just was like a warm feeling and like kind of like, OK, where have you kind of been my whole life? And I was only 10 years old and I'm playing with the boys. There were no girls out there playing. It was all boys. And they roughed me up a little bit. They taught me how to play, you know, the hard way. I have a cousin that's a year older than me who had some different life circumstances later on. He's doing a lot better now, but he was the one that kind of would take me under his wing and take me up to the courts with him, or we would play on a crate. I mean, I know you know about Philly life, the crate basketball. You know, we had one on, you know, on 30th Street, and we would just, if we didn't feel like going around the corner to the park, we would play on the crate. And it was just one of those things where I love the camaraderie and the teamwork. But you also had to learn your individual way of trying to score and navigate. So it was a lot that I had to learn in a short period of time. And I didn't play organized basketball until I was 12 when I went to Fells Junior High.
When did you start to realize you were good?
You know what? Probably not till, I don't know, maybe junior year of high school that I actually... Okay, I'm one of the better players, you know, in the city, and people actually know who I am when I'm going to different, you know, gyms and stuff like that, or courts I'm playing on, because the boys actually know who I am now in the neighborhood and stuff like, because, you know, it's like you get a rite of passage when you get picked. And, you know, before you're just sitting there and they don't know who you are. And then you finally get out there when it's your turn and they're like, wow. And then they remember you the next time you come. So I think it was probably around junior year. I had been starting since a freshman year at Central High School for Vince Parzial, who was my coach at the time. And I just remember playing in the DBL leagues, the developmental basketball leagues, with Luraline Jones, who's a Hall of Fame coach from U City, from University City High School. And she had different leagues that she put together. And I would go down and play at the courts at 40th and Mantua, I believe. It's like a library and, you know, and a gym in one. And Yolanda Laney was running workouts. And, you know, after we played pickup or played in the leagues and stuff like that. And I think it was then when you had kids that were your peers on other teams that were like, hey, you know, I heard you can grab the rim. One girl said, and I was like, what are you talking about? I was like, no, I've never grabbed the rim before. I mean, you try to get up there and finger rolling a layup, but I'm not grabbing a rim. Or ones that are like, man, I heard you drop 30 in this game or that game. And that's when you start to feel like, oh man, you know, you get a few accolades, you know, all public honors and things like that. You're like, oh, I guess I'm not too bad, you know. But I thought I had to earn a lot too, because I was always in high school, I was the youngest, you know, player starting on the high school team in ninth grade. And I don't know what Vince Parzial saw in me, but he saw something and he wanted to infuse some confidence in me. And no matter how many times I was turning the ball over or anything like that, he still kept saying, you're fine. You know, you're going to be okay. And I think with, you know, playing in the public league, it's so different than the suburban kids in the Catholic league, because we literally only had Monday through Friday. There were no extra workouts on Saturdays. The gym was not open during holidays. It's so much different now, I would think, for the public school kids. But back then, it just, the access was not there for our coaches. So I think, you know, Coach Parzial did the best that he could with me, seeing me being a little rough little thing and just, you know, refining me as a diamond and, you know, kind of working with me. And Coach Kane happened to see me when she was watching an older player on our team, I think either sophomore or junior year. And that's when Westchester started to recruit me. And, you know, then you start hearing the chirps of, oh, this school's taking a look at you, or that school's taking a look at you. And you're like, wow, I guess I'm not too bad then. But the respect from the peers, I think, meant more to me, you know, than anything, as far as like knowing that you're a quality player, you know, coming out of North Philly and also Germantown, you know, playing on the courts there, then, oh, you're getting this letter or that letter. Cause I feel like I was still underrated, you know, as far as recruiting came by, you know.
Did growing up, your introduction to the game, you know, playing with the boys and playing probably older boys, and then you mentioned in high school, you're a young player. It seems like you're constantly kind of punching up and constantly battling. How much did that shape who you are as a basketball player because you're just constantly climbing and constantly pushing forward. Nothing's coming easy.
I felt like it was a good thing because I never came home and felt like I wanted to quit. And I don't think my dad would have allowed me to do that, but it was more of, you just got to stick with it. If you want to be better, you just have to continue to stick with it. And there was no one else in my family playing at the time. There were no other athletes, you know, at the time. I have younger cousins. I have a younger brother who's 8 years younger than me. So I was the only one involved in sports. And it was kind of like, you just work hard. You know, your family works hard. They go to work every day. They do what they do. And it just translated onto, you know, the court. If you want something bad enough, you have to work to get it because no one's handing it to you. And I think my dad, I mean, I'll never forget the first time I ever beat him in one-on-one. That was like a big deal because he never took it easy on me. And I think if you have that kind of a background like I did, no one's taking it easy on you. You have to keep working to be better. I think that's a big life lesson. And I think that's why I'm where I am now, you know, as a Division I head coach, because I learned through basketball that you really have to continue to work every single day. And Coach Kane will tell you, I was not the most refined, you know, basketball player. I was a very raw talent, you know, going into college, and I had to learn a lot fundamentally. But understanding the game to a certain degree was something that was important to me. I like to watch basketball. The first team I ever watched was John Chaney's Temple team, you know, the 88 team that went to number one, because one of my PE teachers was his wife. And that's how I got the introduction into college basketball. But I think it was just every day you've got to prove yourself. And there was no turning back to quit. It wasn't like, oh, I picked up an instrument and I decided not to play again. That was a different story. I did do that. I did quit playing, you know, instruments and stuff. But basketball was something different. And I just wanted to be as good as I possibly could and wanted to be as tough, too. I didn't want to look weak in front of anybody. So I wanted to continue to be the best, you know, at what I was doing.
Who were some players that you maybe used as inspiration for your game? You mentioned Yolanda Laney, phenomenal player on some great Chaney teams. Were there other players in the area or that you watched on TV on college that you kind of used as kind of guideposts for your game?
I don't know if I used like female basketball players. Like my dad did introduce me to watching women play when Cheryl Miller was at USC. And she was one of the first players that my dad kind of sat me down and said, you know, she's like the best player in the country. Like, watch her. And women's games were not on that much. Ann Donovan, you know, people like that, that he could show me on TV that they were the best of the best. And then I got into watching Tennessee Lady Vols, you know, watching them play. And Pat Summitt was my favorite coach. God rest her soul. As far as immediate people, like right in the Philly area, Yolanda was somebody that trained us. She was already a pro. She had, you know, been done with college and all that type of stuff. And she would come back and do the trainings. But I played against some really good players in high school, like a Danique Graves, who was at University City, who played at Howard. And her jersey is hanging up in the rafters, you know, at Howard. There were several other all public players, Fifi Bell, who went to play at Quinnipiac. And some of us didn't go to like big name schools, even though some got recruited by like Danique got recruited. She was a year younger than me, but she got recruited by pretty much all the BCS schools back then. But she wanted engineering. So like playing against taller players, like I used to pride myself on being able to score against a kid who was 6'2". Like, you're not going to block my shot. So I don't think I patterned myself after any one person. Dr. J was my favorite player growing up because that was my dad's favorite player. So I just love how he could just soar through the air, you know? So if anything, I'm dreaming of being able to, you know, yeah, maybe dunk the basketball. I was too short, but hey, you're going to try to get it up high anyway. But I think there wasn't just one or two. I just like seeing good basketball players play. And that was just an inspiration to me. And for my dad to be able to have the foresight to say, hey, sit down and these are some good women that you need to watch. I don't know if anybody else's dad was doing that back then, but he thought that was important to introduce me to the women's game, you know, in that way, especially when you're only looking at one or two games a year that were on TV.
So you do go to Westchester and you mentioned Coach Deirdre Kane recruiting you, and then you started to hear other schools. Was it always going to be Westchester? Were there moments where there were other schools in play?
Talk about, you know, Jefferson, which was Philly Textile, you know, back then. Coach Shirley, You know, he recruited me pretty heavily. His assistant coach recruited me pretty heavily during like my senior year, like end of junior year, senior year. That was another local school that I was like, okay, you know, maybe that's an opportunity, you know, as well. None of the big fives, you know, at the time I wasn't on anybody's radars, you know, back then, which is fine. You know what I mean? You still want to prove yourself, right? Like it doesn't have to be a Division I school. In my mind, that wasn't the end all be all. It was just to be able to go to college, number one, and get a great education. And then, by the way, okay, I get to play something that I love. And later on, there were a few schools that were some D1s that came sniffing around. But I just kind of, when I went on the visit to Westchester and I met Coach Kane and had some conversations with her and her assistant at the time, Tracy Malin, Tracy Moore is her last name now. And I felt like it was home. I felt like Coach Kane was going to be a mom like my mom, and she was going to be on me about stuff. But she was also going to be a great cheerleader, too, and be a person that is going to tell you when you're doing right and all that kind of stuff. So it felt right when I went to visit there. Not saying that I didn't like it at Textile. Tammy Green was starring there and doing a great job. And I was like, I don't know if I'm even going to see the floor with, you know, with her being there. She got how many years of eligibility left, you know? But I felt like Westchester was, you know, just a great place, a great fit, far enough away from home that I could still get, you know, home cooked meal if I needed to. But being around such a great group of young women that I met when I came, you know, on the visit, which was pretty cool.
So when you start at Westchester, did it feel like you took a big step up, like the first practices, the first years of games? Like, did it feel like things had gotten to a different speed, or was it relatively comfortable for you where you were like, okay, we'll be fine?
I had no idea what I was doing. That's when I realized I was like, you're not as good as you thought you were. And these women are bigger than you. They're stronger. They're not as fast, some of them, but they were bigger and stronger. That's for sure. And the training that we had, never, you know, trained so hard. The weights, you know, I wound up tearing my ACL during my freshman year. And I think that made me grow up. Because I Coach Kane can definitely attest to the immaturity that I came in with and thinking that I was, you know, further along than I was. And what I realized was, you know, the game of basketball, I needed to learn a lot more. I definitely needed to get stronger and be more committed, you know, in the weight room and have a great overall understanding of the game. I needed to learn all of these things. And I think getting injured really gave me that slap in the face that I needed and the motivation to again, you know, you're not doing what you need to do. You've got to do better. And I thank Coach Kane all the time and tell her I love her. Because she hung in there with me because freshman year was not, you know, it was not easy. And it was really a reality check. And that wasn't a knock on where I came from. And Coach Parzial, he did the best that he could. And he'll tell you that. But he handed me off to her and he knew that she was going to be able to take me to new heights and that she was going to take care of me in a way that it was going to be the right way, you know, to handle me. Because I think for some coaches, they don't get it. And what I loved about Coach Kane was she grew up in South Philly for part of her life. So she understood where I was coming from as an inner city kid. And I think some other coaches, I don't think would have understood that like her. So she had a good way of being able to reach me and bringing me in, pulling me in for conversations and life talks like, hey, you're not cutting it right now. You're not doing everything that we know you're capable of doing. We brought you here for a certain reason and you're not holding up your end of the bargain right now. And she had a nice way about doing it, sarcastic at times, but she was able to really hit me in a way like, I know that you're capable of doing more than this because that's why we brought you here. And it wasn't about putting a lot of stats up, just knowing the hard work, you know, being a city kid and being a good teammate. I was always a good teammate, you know, matter what year of high school or junior high, I was a good teammate and just being a person to get stuff done in the classroom. And I wasn't at that time. And that's when she said, listen, we got to do better than this. And it was a great wake up call for me. And I think some people think injury can set you back and not get you going on the right track. But for me, I would say that tearing my ACL and having to go through a year of not being able to play was what woke me up. And I don't think I'm here coaching right now without having that adversity to go through because Coach was really there every step of the way. Obviously, my parents and my high school coach, but that really woke me up. And I think for some people, it can send you down the wrong path. But for me, it projected me, you know, a lot forward.
I'm curious if that's it. I guess you were out about a year, give or take, with that?
A year and a half, actually.
A year and a half?
Because I was misdiagnosed at first. One doctor said, oh, she tore it. The other said, oh, it looks like a partial tear. So I tried to come back to play and then wound up getting injured in practice. And then that's when they said, we think you probably, you know, completely tore it. So I sat out. I only played about two or three games my freshman year, my real freshman year. And then the next year I sat out the sophomore year to rehab my knee because I had surgery in June between my freshman and sophomore year.
In addition to all the things you talked about from a maturity standpoint, but did sitting and watching, did it change the way you look at the game? Because I would imagine this was the first time that, I mean, you meant talk about watching games on TV growing up, but this was the first time for a long period of time you weren't able to play, but you were still there. Did it change how you see the game, you think?
It did. And it slowed it down for me, to be honest with you. I really was more of a student of the game and understanding what was going on. The athletic trainer, you know, they made a point to like, okay, you do your rehab at a certain time. But even when I was doing stuff on the side, I was paying attention to what was going on and what was coach talking about or Coach Stinger talking about or any of the GAs that were on staff during that time and how we were teaching, putting things in defense, offense. Where did I fit in with all of this? And one thing I will say about Coach was she didn't want to necessarily pigeonhole you to a position. Yes, you had the position you played, but she was big on knowing every part of the play. You know, whatever play we put in, she used to test us. She used to give us a test because she was a teacher by trade. She used to test us. And those things bode well for me when I came back because I understood all the little intricacies of what we were doing. And I was so much better for it when I came back.
Did you start to get excited? I mean, obviously you get excited when you're getting healthy and you're going to be able to play. But given what you just said about things slowing down, how excited were you? Did you feel like you almost had this like key to the golden lock that you just couldn't wait to get out there and put what you had learned together with a healthy body?
Yes. And honestly, when I was, you know, pretty much almost clear to play, we still had season to go. But, you know, obviously they weren't going to put me out there. So I was excited about beating people in sprints again, because that was one thing I prided myself on. And when I finally was able to get back out there, just really helping not just myself, but helping teammates too, who were freshmen coming in and helping them to understand like, hey, this is how we do things. This is what coach is talking about with this play or this drill, you know, being one of the people first in line when you're doing drills instead of hanging back. You know, some kids, they kind of like let everybody else go. Like I wanted to be someone in the front of the line and doing drills and to show everybody, you know, what I could do. And the funny thing is when I first came back, you know, games started rolling around and I wasn't getting in there, didn't get a lot of time. And I was like, what, you know, like I'm ready. And coach didn't maybe feel I was ready. And I still had more to learn and more to grow with. And it was kind of interesting, you know, when that was all going down, because maybe she'd throw me in for a minute or two, you know, that was it. And, you know, you can get people chirping in your ear, like, what's going on? Like, you're back. Like, why aren't you, you know, playing and stuff? And it's like, no, I guess I'm just not ready yet. In her opinion, I'm not ready. But I did have my high school coach come and watch practice one time. And he said, you know what? There's not a lot of difference there. They're getting an opportunity. You're not. You got to wait your turn. But he said, in the meantime, you know what? Practice needs to be your game. And I took that to heart. So every day at practice, I was trying to make the purple team better. That was, you know, the starters and stuff. So I wanted to make them better. So if they're getting better, then I think I'm getting better too. And, you know, I just tried to do that and have a great attitude and not be the teammate that's dragging people down because, you know, you're back, but you're not able to play and get on, you know, get in games. I didn't think that that was right. I didn't like teammates that were negative that way. That was not me. And that's not who I was. Because again, I had to fight for everything. So I'm just going to continue to fight.
So when's the breakthrough? When does the opportunity come where kind of the reins are thrown off and you can go put this all to work?
So redshirt junior year, I had secured a role of at least one of the top guards coming off the bench. At that time, we had some really good starters ahead of me. So it wasn't like, oh, you know, this kid's terrible. Why is she starting? You know, that type of thing. I thought we were even. But hey, as long as I can come in and help the team in some way, shape or form, because that was my whole thing. You know, how can I help the team defensively? Coach was like, I don't really need, you know, offensively. All right. Yeah, you need to know the plays and stuff. But defensively, we need you to be a person that steps up and help stop, you know, one of the top guards on the other team. So redshirt junior year, I started getting more and more time, you know, coming off the bench and really contributing. I think we had gone to postseason that year for the first time in a long time. We went to ECACs and it was like, okay, this is cool. So then deciding on coming back for a fifth year was like not an option for me. Like I knew I was coming back, you know, I wanted to, because I felt like at that point, after 4 years, there was still work to be done, you know, and I knew that I could still contribute in some way, shape or form, however coach wanted it to be. that I was all in as a fifth year senior to come back. And I'm glad that I did. You know, my co-captain, Kate Stanley, she came back. We were both fifth year, came in at the same year in 92, fall 92. And we wanted to finish together. And we wanted to finish what we started. Because the year before we got there, that team went to, they won the ECACs. They just missed going to the NCAA tournament because at the time they didn't take as many teams. So our goal was to get back to that. You know, we want to get to the NCAA tournament. And we didn't know if we'd start, if we'd play a lot, but we wanted to help lead this group. And we come back and we're not picked first in the conference or anything. And I'm telling you, it just took off. And I think our unselfish attitudes, that permeated through the whole team. And it was just about the sum of the parts and all, and not just individually. You know, it was like the whole is greater than the sum of the parts or something like that. That people say, that's what it was for us. And I think we kind of stuck with that. And so everybody else followed that lead. But that breakthrough happened that redshirt junior year. And I didn't look back, did not look back after that.
And you do make the NCAA tournament that final year. And it's yes. The first one in Westchester history. What's that feeling like? It's obviously joy, but is it also, it's got to be an immense amount of satisfaction, maybe a little bit of relief. We did it. Whew. Like what's the emotions when that happens and when you get to play at that level?
It was amazing. I mean, we won our side, we won the PSAC East, and that was great. I would never forget that day when we found out that, you know, after our game, we were waiting on scores from other people to see if we'd secured it, and we did, and everybody's hugging, you're crying, you know, all the things. And then it's like, oh man, we got to get ready for the playoffs, you know, and we were hosting the PSAC Final Four. And, you know, we lost in the semis, and I know everybody was upset. But we knew we were ranked in the region. So it was kind of like, we should be okay, guys. Like, I think we're going to get this bid. And we had the watch party and then just everybody being so excited, just seeing our parents, members of the Westchester community that were friends of Coach Kane. You know, you're talking the AD, the president. I mean, it's all these people that gathered around us to watch the selection show. And then that's when it became like really real. Like, we did this, guys. We did this. And I still look at those pictures now. I have one on my refrigerator at home. And I mean, you still feel the joy, even, you know, now you still feel it, you know, almost 27 years later. And you're just like, wow, we did that. And I think everyone on that team, they fell in line with what they needed to do. And it wasn't perfect. I will say that much. We had arguments. We had different situations that people got into that coach didn't even know about, but we had to handle it as captains and all that type of stuff. But we're all still bonded. Like those women that were on that team, like we all still, you know, keep in touch with each other. And that joy that we had, I think, you know, you go on that sometimes when you're having a tough day and you start thinking about, you know, the people that love you and care about you. And I think about those teammates that were alongside for the 20 suicides in 20 minutes that we had to complete before we even got into official practice. And that was like the last day of preseason, 20 suicides in 20 minutes. And it's like, what just happened? And we all did it. We all got through it. And those are the things that at the end, when you realize you made an NCAA tournament for the first time, those tears of joy, because you think about everything that it took to get to that point. And for me and Kate Stanley, we went through knee injuries to get to that point. And to see coach's face, like to finally get there was pretty awesome to be the team, you know, to be able to do it for her, because we wanted to make her proud. I know all of us wanted to make her proud, and she was. And that's why, like, we always joke around now. She can't say a bad word about any of us to this day because we got her to the promised land.
Time for a break on One-on-One. We will have more with Niagara University head women's basketball coach Jada Pierce coming up. But right now, there's nothing quite like the Honda Accord Hybrid and the CR-V Hybrid when it comes to exhilarating efficiency. With hybrid technology and thrilling capability, these vehicles deliver an electrifying performance on every drive. This new year, discover for yourself what truly makes these hybrids special. Redefine your driving experience with Honda. KBB.com's best value brand of 2023. Contact your local Honda dealer today about the Honda Accord Hybrid and the CR-V Hybrid. And now on One-on-One with Matt Leon, let's return to our conversation with Philadelphia native and Niagara University head women's basketball coach Jada Pierce.
So when does coaching figure in for you? Is it something you always figured would be in your life, whether it was a CYO team or Division I college? Like, did you always figure you were going to coach one way or another?
No. I thought, honestly, like when I was younger, I was like, oh, I want to be a doctor. Then I kind of shifted. Oh, I want to be a lawyer. And I honestly thought that that's what I was going to do up until about halfway through college. And we're working Coach Kane's camps. And I just got the bug then. You know, I had my own team. You know, you're coaching your team at camp. These like little, you know, 10 and 11 year olds, and they're hanging on every word that you're saying. And it's a big deal. And they're looking at you like you're a superstar because, you know, you play at Westchester. Like, oh, my gosh. So I realized then that I wanted to coach. But I also told Coach Kane in the next breath when I told her I wanted to coach, I said, I do not want to do high school, that I do not want high school. And she said, OK. And so everything, I think from then on, I always worked her camps. She got me connected with other camps, you know, in the area like Kathy Rush and things like that, to try to work those camps to kind of get ready for the next level for college. And I think everything she did, once I expressed this is what I wanted to do, she wanted to help me with reaching, you know, that goal. So I didn't mind the hot gyms in the summer of working camps. I thought it was a joy. I thought it was fun. Built great relationships with other players from other schools that came to work our camps who were from Westchester or Downingtown, you know, like the Tina Nicholsons, the Tora Subers and people like that, that would come back and work camp, you know, with us and stuff. It was a lot of fun. And, you know, I think just having that joy and seeing somebody get it was like, okay, this is it. Like, you're teaching a skill, things that we were taught, I get to teach someone else and see them light up when they figure out, you know, how to do it. And that was pretty cool to me. And I was like, man, I really want to do this. This is what I want to do. And I think I was like junior going into my actual senior year. So like redshirt, you know, sophomore year going into to junior, you know, redshirt junior year and stuff like that. And I was like, I could see myself doing this. I don't know how good I'm going to be, but I can see myself doing this.
So how's the first door open? I think it was St. Michael's was your first job, St. Michael's College, right? And that looked pretty much right out of college. Kind of what's the scenario that gets you there?
So I come in, you know, I come in the office later in, you know, like April or May, and I'm talking to Coach about, you know, job stuff. And I was getting my resume together and things like that. Dr. Tammy James over at Westchester was helping me with putting my resume together. And I said, Coach, are there any jobs out there? Obviously, I don't know how any of this goes. And so she told me she heard there was a position at St. Mike's. And I was like, well, where is that? I know we had just played them in the Dial Classic, like just played this team. I remember how hard they fought. They were 0-1 whatever coming in our game. But my coach kept saying, they're the best 0-8 team I've ever seen, 0-10, whatever it was. And I remember the coach being really good coach, animated, you know, all the things. And she said, I'll give them a call and see what they're looking for. And she said, when she called up Sue Duprat, Sue said she actually remembered who I was. And she said, oh, yeah. She said, I remember Jada. She was a captain on your team. I remember her, carried herself really well. Oh, yeah. We'd love to interview her. And it just, you know, went from there. I had a great interview up there. They brought me up and I hit it off with everybody up there. They offered me the job. And then I just told them I had to think about it, pray about it, talk to my pastor, you know, things like that. And once I went up there, after I finished summer school at Westchester, I, you know, it just went on from there. So we moved up. They moved me up there. My family drove me up in August, beginning of August in 97. So I got done classes, I think, in July, around in that time. I had to finish a couple of classes, you know, after they let me walk. And Sue Duprat actually came to our game at Vermont. So I had a little bit of nostalgia last week when she came, you know, to the game to see me be a head coach for the first time. It was her first time watching me in action. And that meant so much, you know, to me, for her she helped me start this. And I don't know where I'd be without her for giving me that opportunity. And I told her that, and I thanked her. I was like crying when I was hugging her, because I keep thinking, had she not given me that opportunity, I don't know if I'm here. You know, I don't know if I'm at Niagara. And it was pretty special. But they welcomed me with open arms up there at St. Mike's. And it was a great experience. And I learned a lot from Sue, and, you know, and took that with me everywhere I went. You know, you learn from each coach that you work with and for. And she taught me about not working for her, but working with her. And that stuck with me, too, that, you know, I wasn't just some person to boss around and not take seriously. She gave me a lot of responsibility. And I was the JV coach when I was up there, the head coach for the JV team. And that gave me a good sense of what it's like to run your own program, you know, in a sense. So that was a pretty amazing experience, too, at such a young age, you know, of 23, 24.
What was the toughest thing when you started coaching? Toughest lesson or toughest thing to get used to at first? Because as you mentioned, at that young age, where I wouldn't be surprised if there's a kid or two that's the same age as you on a roster. So what were some of the challenges once you got that first foot in the door and started coaching?
I think it was the fact that with that team, we just played them. So they were looking at me like, okay, not as coach at first, as someone they played against, you know, and I'm like, I'm not your peer. Like I'm one of the coaches, and, you know, building a different type of relationship that we're not, quote unquote, friends. We can't be friends until you graduate. But having that line there and understanding that, hey, you know, I'm here to help you and assist you to be better. But at the same time, please understand that we're not hanging out. This is not what we're doing. So I think that was a hard part because I had no family up there. You know, I had no family. I had to make friends and do all that, and understanding that, hey, they might be around the same age and they think that I'm cool or whatever, but we can't hang out. But I do know that I had a high level of respect from them because of just playing them. And they saw, you know, what our teams were at Westchester and stuff like that. So they knew that I knew what I was talking about. So there was no question about that. But it was more of just like making sure that there was that line there that we didn't cross. Like, they knew that we weren't, you know, friends. I couldn't be their friend and hang out with them.
Were there any moments of doubt in those early years? Or like, even if you struggled or had a bad day, you were still all in on coaching?
Yeah, there were some days where you get projects and assignments that have nothing to do with on the court for Sue. And, you know, I had certain responsibilities that, you know, I'm not used to. This is my first job in coaching and trying to manage my time and making sure I'm getting things done on deadlines and all of that type of stuff. I think she was very patient with me, because there were some days I think back now and I'd be like, why didn't she fire me? Because I had no idea what I was doing. I'm handing in work that's like, you know, not totally completed, not because I'm being lazy, just because I didn't know. And her just really sitting down with me and mentoring me in a way that was going to help me, not just at St. Mike, but was going to help me later on. So I think there were some doubts, you know, that way when it came to off the court and really understanding, you know, my responsibilities with Film Exchange. And we all know back then is VHS, and you're literally waiting for the VHS tapes to get done. You already have your envelopes ready to go and ready to mail out. And do you have to drive them to, you know, UPS or wherever to get them, you know, all that type of stuff. And I think for her having that patience with me, so that helped me get through those tough days of like, man, I'm really like messing up. But I tried to make it a point to not mess up with the same thing twice. And that's what I try to tell younger coaches. It's okay for you to make mistakes, but we don't want you making the same mistake twice. You have to learn from your mistakes. And I think I did a pretty good job of that. So year two was a lot easier than year one. And year two is when she gave me the JV team. Now, doubt creeping in? Absolutely. Running a practice, you know, by yourself and traveling with a team, you know, not very far, but traveling and coaching a team and calling your own timeouts. It's like, this is not camp. This is not camp at Westchester right now, or Kathy Rush. Like, I got to know what I'm doing here.
So a couple years at St. Michael's and then University of Delaware. What's the jump like from Division II to Division I as an assistant? Was it noticeable, or is it kind of the same thing, just maybe by a factor of two as far as size and stuff like that?
It was a lot different because I did some recruiting at St. Mike's, but it was fairly local. When I say local, I didn't go maybe further than Westchester County, New York. You know, maybe there was something down there, or Boston. So I think the biggest jump for me was not only, you know, the talent and, you know, in workouts and practices, but also the travel with recruiting. And I was like, wow, we literally go like all over the country to go watch games. And I didn't work in the summer then. I worked basketball camps in the summer because I was technically on a 10-month contract at St. Mike's. So now I'm working literally all year round. And what does this look like? And what does it feel like? And I know I learned a lot from Tina Martin as the head coach at Delaware because of the way we recruited, how we did recruiting, because it was definitely different than what we did at St. Mike's. And like I said, with me not being there in the summer to go summer recruiting with them, I mean, that was a whole new animal for me. Like, you know, just, and at that time, the calendar was crazy. You went for almost a month straight without a break, and you had to manage your own breaks. So I think Tina was really good with kind of helping me understand that. And, you know, planning out trips, I didn't have to plan anything out because she had a recruiting coordinator that did that. So I was, you know, Janine Radice, she did a lot of that. But I felt like Tina and Janine taught me about the player development side of things, which was a little bit different than St. Mike's. Like, we did player development stuff, but now you're doing it more. You know, there's a lot more. Like you say, times two, I felt like it was times 100, you know, with everything. Writing recruiting letters, calling coaches. So being able to help with scouting reports. I didn't have to do a ton of the scout stuff at, you know, at Division II. You know, Amy did a lot of that on our staff there. So, because they were easing me into things. So I think when I get to Delaware, I'm like, whoa. And just being able to manage everything that you know, the task at hand that, you know, Tina gave me there. But I love the student athletes that I got to work with at Delaware. I'm still, you know, very much in touch with them. And I had to learn, you know, they were teaching me a little bit too, because they knew Coach Martin better than I did at that time. So they kind of would pull me aside and give me a couple tips on things, whether it was a food thing or something else, like, hey, you know, you might want to do this. And I thought that was pretty cool that the older players on the team kind of knew some things and wanted to share it with me to help me out as their coach. And they were amazing. And they really wanted to learn and listen. You know, it was kind of nice.
So after a couple of years at Delaware, UMass Lowell for a couple of years, and then you get the opportunity to be a head coach at Cheney. I think that's 06, if I'm correct.
04. 04 to 06.
04 to 06. Okay. What was that like? Because you're still, you know, what are you, 28, 29? I mean, that's young to have a program. I don't care what the level is. How'd the opportunity come about? And did you feel really ready for it?
I was 30 at the time and I thought I was ready. And then I realized once I got in, I was like, whoa, I've got a lot of work to do. There's a lot more I need to learn. So when the job came open, I talked with Coach Kane. She was the one that told me about the position being open at the time, and she knew the athletic director, Dr. Eve Atkinson. So she made a call, and next thing you know, the ball gets rolling, interviews, things like that. And then I get the position. And once I got in there all 2 feet in, I was like, what just happened? You know, and I think you sit in that chair the first time, you say, okay, I got the job. Now what am I going to do? And, you know, had a plan in place of, you know, instituting different things and having a calendar and all of that. But, you know, they don't teach you that there's fires to put out every day. That's stuff like, well, why didn't Kathy tell me this? Or why didn't Sue or Tina tell me this? Or Coach Kane, I'm calling her up. Like, you not believe what just happened today. And she said, yeah, this is all part of it, Jada. And it's like, you thought you knew what you were getting yourself into. And then you're like, I really didn't know what I was getting myself into. It was so much better being an assistant coach. But I'm thankful for that experience. I think, you know, the young women that I got to coach there, they, you know, they had we all learned together. We all learned together a lot of different things. But I think it was beneficial for both of us. I think that I grew a lot and I learned a lot quickly, and learning to be able to problem solve, you know, on your feet, and also try to uplift these young women when they're going through things that they're going through in life. And because, you know, being the head coach and, you know, they're bringing stuff to you, maybe not to the assistant, because it's that important. It's like, okay, how are we going to manage this? How are we going to get through this? But that was quite an experience, you know, just the feel of Cheney. You know, you still felt like, you know, John Cheney and, you know, and Vivian Stringer were still kind of there in a sense, because you're looking at the pictures and, you know, the names up there in Cope Hall Gymnasium, and you're thinking about, wow, the Yolanda Laneys of the world were here, and they went to, you know, they went to the final championship game. Like, wow, you get a little nostalgic in a sense. And you also understand that you're a caretaker of, you know, a program that has a lot of history. They have fallen on hard times, but it's still a program that had a lot of great history. And you want to be the person to take it back to, you know, the next level. And maybe not, you know, on that scale of a national scale, but at least within the PSAC and, you know, doing some special things. And, you know, kind of fell short with doing that before I left. But what I do know is I left the program better than what I got it. And that's something that Coach Kane, you know, taught us as well, and leaving something better than what you got it. And I think I did that. You know, I was able to do that. And the people that worked with me at Cheney were able to do that on my staff.
So after Cheney, a couple of more stops as an assistant, I think UMass, Marist, Mount St. Mary's, not necessarily in that order. When did you start to feel during that time, West Point as well, that you wanted to pursue head coaching at Division One?
I think when I was at Mount St. Mary's. So I had made, you know, stop at Marist and at UMass, you know, before that. I learned a lot from Coach Georges, learned a lot from Marnie Dacco. And so I get this opportunity, you know, to work with Brian Witten, you know, at the Mount, and, you know, having some great responsibilities there. And that was I think that's when I started to really feel the urge to, okay, getting some things refined. We've learned a lot since the experience at Cheney. And I think this is the next step in everything that I, you know, I had hoped and dreamed could be attainable. I was like, okay, this is the next step. And now how do I get there? So after I left Mount St. Mary's, I was blessed to have the opportunity to work with Dave McGarity at West Point. And he gave me a ton more of responsibilities, knowing that I expressed to him, I want to be a Division I head coach, and I know that you're going to help me get there. And he made it clear. He goes, listen, I'm going to give you a lot of responsibility here. I want you to, you know, help with the younger members on staff, you know, all of those things. And X's and O's wise, you know, hey, you know, I'm going to talk about this, that, and the other thing. And I think, you know, I thought that was going to be my last stop, actually, before getting a head job. I thought with being with Coach McGarity and a lot of, you know, what he gave me as responsibilities, I took to heart and understood that, you know, the why of certain things. And he had a lot that he had on his plate, especially being at the academy and how he trusted me to help him with making decisions. I thought that was key in involving me in certain things and that I knew that, okay, I can do this. So now it's going to be a matter of when that opportunity happens, you know, I need to be prepared. So what else more do I need to be doing, adding to the tool shed of what's going to make me successful, you know, in being a Division I head coach. So Coach McGarity instilled a lot of confidence in me. And the next thing you know, Coach Griffin calls, Cindy Griffin calls. And I felt like Coach McGarity was pushing me out the door, Matt. But he felt, you know, he knew it was a better opportunity at St. Joe's. And, you know, we all love Big Five basketball. It was always a goal of mine to be able to coach in the Big Five since I was not able to be a player in the Big Five. And that went along with some certain decisions I made coaching wise, assistant coaching wise, to be able to get back home, to be able to coach in the Big Five. And so when Cindy called, it was just such a great honor to be noticed by her, that she would want me to be a part of her staff and everything that they had already, you know, been building, you know, since she had come back to Hawk Hill. And I think that Cindy even more instilled, if I thought I couldn't get pumped up anymore from Coach McGarity, Cindy really just, you know, Jay, I know you're already ready now to be a head coach, but we'd love to have you here and help us in what we're trying to do. And we had a lot of talks, you know, over those 3 years I was there, and, you know, some tears a little bit too when I didn't get certain jobs, you know, that I interviewed for that I thought I would be a good candidate for. But she told me to keep my head up and that she knew that I would, you know, be a Division I head coach one day, and that she was going to be, you know, that I was going to be successful. And she knew that. And so that was our quest to really get that done for me and give me the responsibilities that I needed to have on my resume. If I felt short in anything, hey, this is what we're going to have you do. And that way it can't say you haven't done a whole lot. And the only thing I didn't have was an associate head title. But we both agreed that that really didn't matter because the body of work is the body of work. And what I've been involved with over the years was going to help me in getting that next, you know, next job and get that position as being a head coach.
Favorite memories during your time at St. Joe's?
Winning the A-10 championship. Okay, before winning the A-10 championship, we beat Maryland. They were ranked in the top five, I believe, in the country. They came to our place, and it was my scout, Matt. I loved it. So we beat them. It was amazing. I mean, the Hawk is running, flying around all over the place. The court gets stormed, the whole deal. That's like my biggest, like, first memory. I'm like, wow, I just got here. We beat Maryland. This is awesome. And we had a lot of other great wins that year at the buzzer at Drexel. Aaron Shields hits a three-pointer for us to win the game there at Drexel. And then to culminate everything was, you know, winning the A-10 championship in the Barclays in front of the biggest crowd for an A-10 championship game at the time, beating Fordham. And it felt so good. And what I really loved was seeing the look on Coach Griffin's face, like, when we won. And it was just to see that elation and joy in her, because she hadn't gotten to that point, you know, on Hawk Hill at her alma mater and taking a team to the tournament. I mean, that was everything for me. And I just said to her, I was like, this is why I came here. Like, this is why I came here to help you, you know, to do this. And it was just, I mean, we cried, we laughed. I mean, it was just amazing. And you never forget that moment. But that was something that, yeah, that was pretty awesome. And then we follow up next year with an at-large bid, and then we win a first round game. You know, we beat Georgia, and even that year we weren't sure if we were getting in. And I did the schedule. I did the schedule, and I was like, I hope that non-conference schedule paid off for us, Coach Griffin, because I hope it did, you know, because we got exited early, you know, in the A-10 tournament, I think in the quarters that year. We didn't even make the semis. And she thanked me for the schedule after we got in, of course. You know, she's like, thanks for that schedule, Jay. And I was like, man, this is awesome. And to be able to win, you know, win a game, and then you play UConn, of course, you know, to win a game was pretty cool. But there's some great memories on Hawk Hill. And then my last year, I didn't know, you know, I hadn't gotten the job here yet, but we didn't have a great year. You know, we were a little bit under 500, I think, that year. And Natasha Cloud's senior year, and her getting drafted and us being at her house when she got drafted. There wasn't a dry eye in that house when her name got called. And her family had just had a house fire, you know, that winter. And we were helping the family get through that. And just to see us back at this house that almost burned to the ground, and everybody's there celebrating, you know, Natasha getting drafted, was something unreal, because the family, you just felt that family love, you know, just everybody. And that was pretty awesome, too. So it's hard to pick out just one memory, Matt, because there were so many, you know, good ones on Hawk Hill.
So compare and contrast the feelings for me when you get the head coaching job at Cheney as opposed to getting the head coaching job at Niagara. And what I mean by that is, you talk about being in that chair and you're like, okay, now what? The difference in maybe being overwhelmed at Cheney and at Niagara, it's a challenge. It's a Division I program, but, you know, we're locked and loaded. We know we are ready to go.
Yeah, I've felt so much more prepared. And, you know, you do get that feeling still like, wow, I'm here. And now what am I going to do? But it's not like the real scariness I felt the first time. And knowing that, you know, you have a plan in place of what you're trying to do, who you need to contact, and what's the first priority of things that, you know, first 10 things maybe that you have to get done. You know, you're still hair on fire, you know, you're still, or as some coaches say, you're drinking out of a water hose instead of a fountain. But you also still feel secure enough to know that you've been through different situations, how to prioritize and strategize of what comes first. You know, and then what's second, and who to go to for different things. And I felt like this time it was a totally different feeling, to be honest with you, because I felt, you know, immediately that the administration here, they really had the faith that hey, you're going to get this done. You're going to get this done some way, somehow. And we know you're going to do it the right way, because that was important. You know, so many people go in with the idea of flipping a program. And they're not 2 feet in. They're just, you know, motoring along. You're not treating the players right. You're shuffling people in and out. But I think they knew I was going to do things the right way and with care, and being a caretaker of this program, being a servant leader, you know, being a leader on campus in this community was going to be something important to me, that they knew that I was going to make sure that I was going to make the name of Niagara women's basketball proud. You know, these people were going to be proud of this program, and to see where we're at now and where it started, it's pretty awesome. It is.
Favorite part of your job?
Wow. I actually love seeing like the light bulb, you know, kind of come on for these kids, and to see them kind of grow and mature. Because I had bounced around, as we know, as an assistant, I hadn't been anywhere longer than 3 years. So you don't get to see like a whole class go through, like from freshman year to senior. And I love seeing how they come in and what they are as great young women when they're getting ready to walk out the door, you know, and they're getting that degree and walking across that stage and feeling like, hey, she's ready for a few things, you know, when she gets out here in the real world. So I think that's kind of the best part, because I never had that experience before I got here. So it's been really a joy and a pleasure. Because there's so many ups and downs when you think about when somebody gets a senior year. And I remember 2 years ago, one of our seniors was about to graduate. And I was like, did you ever think you were going to get to this point? Because I didn't think you would make it here. And we both just started laughing, because she was such a, you know, pain in the butt her freshman year. And it was like, you aren't even going to make it 4 years here. I don't know where you're going to make it 4 years, but not here. And to see her make it and, you know, getting into graduate school and all that type of stuff, was just we laughed, because that's the part that, you know, everybody forgets about that. And seeing the light bulb come on and they make that shift, whether it's junior year or sophomore year, that they really start to get it. You're like, wow, you're going to be okay. And I helped a little bit with that. You know, you feel like you got a small part in it. And they look at you differently. You know, they talk to you differently when they're juniors and seniors. And to see that look in their eye, it's pretty awesome and overwhelming sometimes too, because some of the ones you don't think are going to make it and they make it. I mean, your heart just, it's overjoyed when you see that happen.
Prefer practice or games?
Practice, because then I don't have any fans yelling at me about how I should be calling a timeout or why is she in the game. And you know, somebody's mom is not yelling about why their daughter's not back in the game yet in her rotation, you know, and all that type of stuff. But I do like practice a lot. I think that, you know, obviously we all know it's the foundation for everything, but it's also where you see them make that jump and how they get better, because you know what it looked like the first day of practice. And then you get to 50, 60 practices in by the end of the year. And we had a player this year. She made some great strides during the year. And you don't usually see huge strides during the year, but she did. And it's that kind of stuff. You're like, yeah, because I saw it in practice first. It didn't just show up in a game. It showed up in practice. And then you translated it over into the game. And I love, yeah, practice over games for sure. But I love the atmosphere of games. Don't get me wrong. But definitely practice over games right now.
And if we go back in time and I come up to Jada rehabbing her knee at Westchester University and I tell you the journey you're going to take over the next, whatever it is, 25, 30 years, would you have believed it?
Probably not. Getting a little choked up. Probably not. You know, at that point, you're so young, you don't even know what you're doing right after college, let alone you're like, hey, I'm just trying to get this knee together so I can get back out there to play with my teammates. And that's the stuff I do think about from time to time, especially last week when I was up at St. Mike's. That took me back. It took me back. And I thought about the tiny apartment that I was living in Winooski. Or fast forward to leaving Cheney and Brian Georges at Marist giving me a chance. He didn't know me from a can of paint, but gave me a chance. And we go to a Sweet 16. Who knew? Because we weren't even picked first in the league that year. And you start thinking about all these things that happen that you're blessed with, that God has really put great people in your life. You call it a who's who. I just think they're all blessings of the people that were put in front of me for a reason. And I think about all of those people and that I'm here. And I never would have thought about that as a freshman or sophomore at Westchester and all the people, because I was a lot shyer back then. And Coach can tell you that all the people that I would have made, you know, friends with along the way to be where I am now. So I would have definitely said, no way. Not this shy kid from North Philly. No way.
Jada Pierce, this was awesome. Thanks so much for taking the time.
Thank you so much, Matt. I'm sorry, I got a little choked up at the end, but appreciate the time. Love all my Philly people.
And that will do it for this week's episode of One-on-One with Matt Leon, sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Get a deal you'll like on a Honda you'll love. Want to thank Philadelphia native and Niagara University head women's basketball coach Jada Pierce for being our guest this week. Now, if you like this show, if you listen on Apple Podcasts, do us a favor and leave us a rating and a review. You can follow this show on X at One-on-One Pod. You can follow me there as well at MattLeon1060. Thanks so much for listening. And be sure to check us out again next week when we bring you another conversation with someone you should know more about.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
True North Convenience Stores and Red Bull are an elite matchup. True North offers returning players Red Bull Original and Sugar Free. First round picks like Watermelon, Wild Berries, and the newest rookie, Red Bull Zero. Right now, grab three of your favorite 8-ounce can flavors for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon with the True Rewards mobile app, available in your favorite app store. Rush into True North to score this deal before the clock runs out. True North Convenience Stores, fast, friendly, clean.
With Ring cameras, you can protect your home from anywhere. You're at baggage claim, and you get motion alert. Check live view and see a guy looking in your car window. Luckily, you've got floodlight cam. So you press the siren button and let 105 decibels do the rest. Problem solved. Home protected. Bag on its way. With Ring, you can protect your home from anywhere. Learn more at ring.com.